questions help us to see why we are unlikely to get what we want by using punishment to change people's behavior. The first question is, what do I want this person to do that's different from what he or she is doing? If we ask only this question, punishment may seem effective because the threat or exercise of punitive force may well influence the person's behavior in ways we want. However, when the second question is asked, it becomes evident that punishment isn't likely to work. The second important question is this: what do I want this person's reasons to be for doing what I'm requesting? We seldom address the latter question, but when we do, we soon realize that punishment and reward interfere with people's ability to do things motivated out of a desire to enrich life for themselves and others. I believe it's critical to be aware of the importance of people's reasons for behaving as we request. For example, blaming or punishing would obviously not be effective strategies if we want children to clean their rooms out of either a desire for order or a desire to contribute to the parents' enjoyment of order. Other children clean their rooms motivated by obedience to authority, because my mom said I had to. They respond out of avoidance of punishment, fear of feeling guilty if they don't, fear of rejection if they don't. Nonviolent communication, however, fosters a level of moral development based on autonomy and interdependence, whereby we acknowledge responsibility for our own actions and our awareness that our own well-being and that of others are one and the same. I'd like to describe how some students and I used protective use of force to bring order into a chaotic situation at an alternative school. This school was designed for students who had dropped out of school or had been expelled from conventional classrooms. The administration and I hoped to demonstrate that a school based on the principles of nonviolent communication would be able to reach these students. My job was to train the faculty in nonviolent communication and serve as consultant over the year. With only 4 days to prepare the faculty, I was unable to sufficiently clarify the difference between nonviolent communication and permissiveness. As a result, some teachers were ignoring rather than intervening in situations of conflict and disturbing behavior. Besieged by increasing pandemonium, the administrators were nearly ready to shut down the school. When I requested to talk with the students who had contributed most to the turbulence, the principal selected 8 boys aged 11 to 14 to meet with me. The following are excerpts from the dialogue I had with the students. Myself, expressing my feelings and needs without asking probing questions, I said, "I'm very upset about the teacher's reports that things are getting out of hand in many of the classes. I'd like very much for this school to be successful. I asked to meet with you today in the hopes that you could tell me what could be done that would improve the school." One of the students said, "The teachers in this school, they're fools, man." I said to the student, "Are you saying that you're disgusted with the teachers and you want them to change some things they do?" "No, man," the student said. "They're fools because they just stand around and don't do nothing." I then said, "You mean you're disgusted because you want them to do more when problems occur?" This was my second attempt to understand his feelings and needs. He said, "That's right, man. No matter what anybody does, they just stand there grinning like a bunch of fools." I asked him if he'd give me an example of what he meant by the teachers doing nothing. He answered, "Easy, just this morning. A student walks in, he had a wild turkey bottle of whiskey in his back pocket. It was plain as day he had that in his pocket. Everybody saw it. The teacher, though, she pretended like she didn't see it. She just looked the other way." And then I said, "So it sounds then that you don't have respect for teachers when they just stand around and do nothing. You'd like something done." He said, "Yeah." I said, "Well, I'm disappointed because I want them to be able to work things out with students, but it sounds like I wasn't able to show them what I meant by how to deal with such situations." The discussion then turned to one particularly pressing problem, that of students who didn't want to work on a particular day and disturbed others in the class. I said, I'm anxious to try to solve this problem because the teachers tell me it's the one that bothers them the most. I would appreciate your sharing what ideas you have with me. One of the students said, the teachers have to get a stick and hit the kids. And I said to the student, so you're saying that you want the teachers to hit people when they bother others? This student said to me, that's the only way the student's going to learn. And I said, so you doubt that any other way would work? He nodded agreement. Well, I said, I'm discouraged if that is the only way. I hate that way of settling things, and I'd like to consider some other ways. And the student said, why? I said, well, several reasons, like, if I get you to stop horsing around in school by hitting you with a stick, I'd like you to tell me what happens if three or four of you that I have hit in class are out by my car when I go home. The student was smiling and said, then you better have a big stick, man. Feeling certain that I understood this student's message and certain he knew I understood, I continued by saying, that's what I mean. I'd like you to see I'm bothered about that way of settling things. I'm too absent-minded to always remember to carry a stick. And even if I remembered, I hate to get my needs met by hitting people if they don't meet my needs. Another student said, well, you could kick the person out of school. And I said, well, you're suggesting that you would just like us then to get people out of the school? He said, yeah. I said, I'm discouraged with that idea, too. I want to show that there are other ways of solving differences in school without kicking people out. I'd feel like a failure if that was the best we could do. Another student said, well, if somebody's doing nothing, why not put them in a do-nothing room? I said, are you suggesting that you would like to have a room to send people to if they're disrupting other people? He said, that's right. There's no use their being in the class if they're not doing nothing but bothering people. I said, I'm very interested in that idea. I'd like to hear how you think such a room would work. The student said, well, sometimes you come to school and you just feel bad. You don't want to do nothing. Maybe your dad beat you up before you came to school. So we could just have a room where students, when they feel bad, they could go there till they feel like coming back and doing the work. I said back to that I understood what he was saying, but I was anticipating that the teacher and other students would be concerned about whether people would go willingly to this room. The student said confidently, they'll go. I said I thought the plan might work if we could show the students that the purpose was not to punish, but to provide a place to go for those who weren't ready to study, and simultaneously a chance to study for those who wanted to study. I also suggested that this room would be more likely to succeed if it was really known that it was a product of what the students wanted, rather than something the staff just put on them. So we set up a do-nothing room for students who were upset and didn't feel like doing anything that day in the form of schoolwork, and whose behavior kept others from learning. Sometimes students asked to go to this room. Sometimes teachers asked the students to go. We placed the teacher who had the best ability to empathize with students in the do-nothing room, where she had some very productive talks with the children who came in. This setup was an immense success in restoring order to the school, because the students who devised it made its purpose clear to their peers, that it was to protect the rights of students who wanted to learn, that it wasn't our intention to punish the others. We used the dialogue with the students to demonstrate to the teachers that there were means of resolving conflicts beside withdrawal from the conflicts or using punitive force.
This concludes session 3. Our program continues with session 4.